Yo, Joes, and greetings, agents of Cobra Command. My name is Steve, this is G.I. Joburg, and in 323, we're going to be bidding farewell to our good friend and stalwart of the G.I. Joe community, Hooded Cobra Commander 788. We're also going to be talking about the issue 4 of Cobra Commander, and many, many other things. There are quite a few talking points in this episode. The demo for Wrath of Cobra has been dropped, and some of us have played it this weekend. But I'm not alone in my quest to talk about all things G.I. Joe. Joining me in studio is Paul. Hello, Paul.
Hey, how's it, Steve? Hey. How's it, Force? Hey, everybody.
And Rob. Thanks
for joining us. Yeah.
Yo, hello everybody, welcome, good evening, good morning, whatever time of day it is for you, hello.
And we are live, actually.
Oh my god.
We have members of the chat filtering in as we speak. Guys, grab a seat, strap in, we're gonna have some fun. It's Spoon Killer and Brick Fiction. Let's see what happens there. Kiwi G.I. Joe Customs, hello Campbell. Danny of Our Time.
Carbonite.
Dross is here. Alan Grant, good morning, Australia. My goodness.
Hello, hello, hello.
Emmanuel in France, where it's late. Stuck in surveillance port. And Christoph. There's some duplications happening here.
Eric Gordlish also loves our video on Facebook. Welcome, Eric.
Darren Cobb.
Good morning, Darren. Good morning, Philippines. Rob is with us.
It's very early
for you, sir. Matt Edwards, everyone's filtering. Hello, everyone, and hello to every listener and viewer in the future. Guys, let's kick things off with the somber notes. Hooded Cobra Commander, after more than 10 years of sterling service, has decided to hang up his clogs, retire from active service, no longer producing videos actively, and no longer, I suppose, taking part in the community, though that remains to be seen. Cobra Convergence 8 is still up in the air as to what's going to happen there. We know what we're doing for Cobra Convergence 8, or the vacuum left by Cobra Convergence 8. We'll get into that later. But right now, let's talk about the man. Brian Lower, friend of ours, but also just a pillar of knowledge and reviews.
That is a numbers guy.
Steve, apparently.
Oh, yeah,
Paul,
man.
You've nominated yourself to have the opening.
I'm nominating myself. Okay. Well, I think it's like, I hate how this feels like a Ugoogly, and I'm not a Ugoogalizer. No, I'm joking. That's a Zoolander reference, if anybody cares. HCC, I gotta say, man, one of the coolest guys in the community, and that comes from actually having, like, you know, personal interactions with him, you know, as G.I. Joburg, as Paul. I got to say, that dude's always been, and Brian, if you're watching this, you have always been, like, really courteous to us, really awesome to us. Always friendly, always, like, real, which is really cool. And, I mean, I remember when we were at JoeCon, you know, just chilling with Brian, it was like, whoa! And then, you know, having done some shows with him, and then all the silliness we've done for Cobra Convergence, and when we've had to chat to him and stuff, yeah. Cool man, he's a cool guy. It's sad that the community is going to lose somebody like Brian because of the kind of content he would create and the way that he would bring us together. But we are also not losing one of the most important things that he created, and I think that's important. It's that even though Brian is stopping, HCC, you know, is stopping being a YouTuber, he's set a foundation for other like-minded individuals to carry on a cool concept, and that is Cobra Convergence. I think whether it's, yeah, let's see what happens with that, you know, going forward.
And just to clarify, none of his content is going away. He's not reaching the channel. HCC 788 will continue to exist as a resource, just not one that is actively producing content. But if you look at his back catalog, more often than not, you'll find a review for whatever you're looking for. He covered a lot.
Absolutely. A ton of toys. Like, I wouldn't say everything, but almost everything.
The most prominent
his wisdom on
exception from that is the one thing that was on his sort of to-do list. Those of you in the know would know that he often mused about the last figure that he bought as a child before setting aside G.I. Joe and moving on, was Rock and Roll Version 2, 1989. And he always held that would be his final review. I guess there's just not enough gas in the tank to complete that mission. So a lot of people are like left feeling like, one last hurrah. But
well, unless he's holding on to that because there is still hope inside him, you know, that he kind of comes back. I think, you know, you can love something, you can turn away from it, you can come back to it. The man of incredible humor as well. Especially those earlier Cobra convergences were like, they were wonderful storylines that people got involved with and got involved in. And also like some of his earliest videos. I was just going through his catalog of videos the other day and I found a really great one that I hadn't seen before, which was his rendition of I'll Be There For You by Bon Jovi, which is Bon Jovi music. And it's He-Man Will Be There For You. So it's kind of like He-Man like rocking out to Bon Jovi. And they kind of like, you know, they kind of, it's a cool send off, I think. You know, he was there for us, HCC, and he will be there for us forever. His channel will be there and hopefully we will see him again. Yeah, so great, great humor, fantastic guy. It was really cool meeting him in Chattanooga in America and sitting with him around a table and just chatting G.I. Joe. It's definitely one of my favorite memories of the, you know, our days in America. And the chats definitely agree. Lots of people sharing a lot of cool stuff about him. Apparently, Brian stays crunching milk, which is not an easy feat in Lenny's bit.
Yeah, I love that comment. That's very cool.
Rob, I think you really tapped into something there, because while everyone finds Hooded Cobra Commander 788 for the review content, to hear very reasoned and intellectual approaches to the toys that we all know and love, I think we all, like, his humor really infiltrated and found a place in all of us. Like, at first you're like, he's doing sketches, like comedy sketches before launching into the review. And you're like, this is weird. This is not what I came here for. But before long, you're like, this is fucking great.
You're looking forward to them. You're like, okay, what's the next quirky thing going to happen next?
Well, I mean, just off the top of my head, and I didn't want to kind of do a kind of a search through his back catalog. I wanted to see what bubbled to the surface. But I have long been a fan of the Skystorm X-Wing Chopper. And I'm reminded of the fact that, like, for a month, he did a special called Ugly Ass Figures. One of them was, of course, Windmill, the pilot for the X-Wing. And I think Brian did a cosplay for each of these ugly ass figures. And when it came turn for Windmill, I mean, it's too easy. It's just high visibility, orange shirt, high visibility, lovely green scarf, pants. And then he went one step further and wore Mickey Mouse ears. Because I had never put it together, because I've got, you know, blinkers on. I'm seeing the cool chopper and I'm just accepting its pilot. But absolutely, he's got these little bobbles on his helmet, exactly where you would have these black Mickey Mouse ears. So Brian really tapped into something there, and very funny. Just to clarify, Brian's moving on because, you know, his heart's not in it anymore. Like, as collectors, I'm sure we can all identify. There are times when we're like,
yeah,
I don't want to be weighed down by this stuff anymore. I want my living room back and not have tote boxes everywhere. That's very much the headspace that he's in. And it's the headspace that he's been in for a while. If you want full explanations, look no further than his channel itself. The most recent upload should still be his explanation of why he's walking away. And it's, as with all of the content on his channel, very well reasoned. I feel a lot of understanding for the guy. And beyond that, I feel a kind of a happiness for him, because anytime I felt like, this is such a hassle, it's pulling enjoyment away from the hobby, let me pack it in. You know, there's a level of anxiety that rises, thinking like, but what if I want to come back to it? It'll be gone forever. Like, I'm sometimes held in a kind of a terror about hanging up my clogs. It's not going to happen. I've crossed that bridge. I've come to the realization that there's no walking away from G.I. Joburg. This will be part of my life forever. I'm not strong like Brian. But
well, as someone, I mean,
very happy for him for being able to set aside that burden and getting on with his life. He's going to sell off a lot of his collection because, man, it is stifling. Like he has said in that video that it's just everywhere and it's encroaching on his personal space. And it's like, it's an imposition now. He's not deriving any joy from all these toys. So they really just clutter things up.
Well, I think we've heard stories from other people before, yeah, where your collection just becomes a bit much. You know, you kind of step away from it. You do sell it off. And it's not forever. I mean, people can come back to their collections. They can buy the toys again. Thankfully, a lot of vintage toys are out there to get again if you ever does want to. And also, I mean, as someone who has kind of had a kind of, you know, kind of like up and down relationship with G.I. Joe and G.I. Joe book, I mean, I'm sure people have noticed there have been times of me being around and being not around. I totally get it. I get it. Sometimes you need to take a break or your head isn't in the space that you want to be in. And it's completely understandable. But yeah, thankfully I have these two guys to draw me back in. And hopefully, I mean, he'll keep up with, you know, he'll keep an eye on things. But yeah, whatever he does, I hope him the absolute best for whatever he does in the future.
Something I wanted to say and kind of want to add, it adds to both what you said, Stephen and Rob. You know, I think it's a very, very healthy thing what HCC is doing, or that HCC is doing. Like, if you don't love something, and I'm not saying he doesn't love G.I. Joe, there are degrees of enjoying something. You know, there's the passion for it, there's obsession, there's passive enjoyment, whatever. And then there is turning something that you love into, I don't want to call it a job, but you start making yourself accountable with something that, you know, that you enjoy, like a hobby or whatever. And as somebody who's essentially made a living or makes a living out of something I enjoy doing, aka drawing, I know how difficult it can be to sometimes have to do the thing, you know, where you have to produce content, you have to produce results, and there's an artistic side of you that's just, oh, I'm drained, I'm done, I can't. And sadly, you know, when you're an illustrator, for example, or any kind of in any creative field, and I'm sure there's many of you guys in the chats listening and understanding this right now, but there's a big difference between getting paid for doing something like drawing and whatever, and then producing it on time for everybody. And I got to say, there's a battery in you, and that can run dry. And I think there's
That's
a point
where if the fact that like he kept up the most insane tempo of work. I mean, from the meager amount of reviews that G.I. Joe book has done to date, I mean, I could not keep up a tempo of a review a week for, you know, close to 10 years.
He was incredible. He kept it up. Like, insane. I mean, it was part of his routine. You know, he kind of went to the office, he did his lawyery stuff, and then, you know, he kind of penciled in hours where, you know, I'm sure, in, you know, where he kind of like filmed and got ready with the script, and he did everything edited.
It consumed incredible personal time, if you let it.
Yeah.
And absolutely. I'm pretty sure there were weeks where he was up against a deadline and it was like crunch time. He was burning the midnight oil and working, so candle at both ends, in order to ensure he met his Sunday deadline of a new review. Well, Sunday for me, it was probably Saturday. I don't know. I forget when his reviews typically came out. Maybe it was Saturday for you in the States. Maybe it was Sunday. I don't know. I forget. But
and that's why
every week.
And that's why I think like it's so important in that, and why what he did was so good, because he basically created a boundary for himself. And I think there's a lot that we, not just as like G.I. Joburg YouTube creators, whatever, can learn from that, but all of us as like toy collectors and people who have passions can learn. Like, if you feel that something that you're doing is not what you love doing anymore, but you keep doing it because you feel other people need you to do it, that's when the burnout happens. That's when the draining happens. And it's a good thing. It's a healthy thing for you to step away from that, to stop that. Now, thankfully, I have Steve and Rob. And we, as G.I. Joe Book, we're a trio. So if, for example, I got to a point where I was feeling maybe a bit of burnout or something, I could say to the guys, hey, listen, do you guys mind if I take a month off or something, just to breathe and just get myself back and, you know, fall in love with the toy again or something like that. And they'll be cool with that. You know, we've got each other for that. And Brian didn't really have that.
Who's going to do our thumbnails?
I'll still do the thumbnails.
I know how to do just Photoshop.
But the thing is, guys, is that Brian did a lot of that by himself, which is admirable. The frequency that he did his content at is amazing, and it's something to definitely learn from. And also just a reminder that, you know, you have to love toys. You have to love what you're doing. Not you have to love. It's like, if you don't love doing something, maybe reevaluate it and figure out what do you love about what you're doing? How do you go forward? And if you can't, be honest with yourself, be honest with your viewers and say that. And I respect that. And HTC, thank you for that video that you did, man, because it was cool to hear your point of view on all of that. Thank you. And also, thank you for 10 years of great content and just for being a mensch, dude, like for being really cool.
Like, yeah. And many more years of content. I mean, you can always go back to everything he's ever done and watch it again.
And it's like a one-stop shop for all things G.I. Joe, actually.
Thankfully, in this case, we do know, you know, what Brian is doing next. Matt pointed out earlier, unfortunately, we still don't know what happened to Form BX257.
Sadly.
Unfortunately. But in this case, we know what Brian's up to. We know he's well. He's making a move that's important to him, you know, mentally and for his own well-being. And all the best for the future.
Yeah, yeah. Nick?
Yeah. Also, cool that he was a bit of a coffin kitty as well. Whenever he used to show like old photos of himself in his youth, I'm like, oh, he's such a goth kid. And I dig it. I can relate to him.
Right.
Anyway, sorry.
Another notable content creator in the G.I. Joe sphere is actually in the chats, and I hope he's still here. JLS Comics, salute to you, sir, because once again, a very important resource and well-researched pillar. If you're not familiar with this channel, check out JLS Comics for a series of who is, and then insert G.I. Joe Cobra name here.
I was like, I know that name.
Yes.
Yes, JLS, dude. Yeah.
Some weeks ago, my new shit was version 1 Grunt or 1.5, the swivel arm. Immediately hopped onto his channel to check out Grunt's character arc. And let me just tell you, I mean, apart from the video being fantastically well produced and researched, the thing that struck me most was, I think of all the G.I. Joe characters, humble, modest infantryman Grunt has got the best character arc of all. Like, his start point versus where he ends up in the comic book continuity.
Why is his face like this?
Michael Ironside. Well, in the 90s, he got that high top fade and he, you know, had a shouty face. Must have gotten some reconstructive surgery or something. But anyways, let me just clue you into the fact that Grunt starts out, as I say, the bullet stopper of the G.I. Joe team, the basic infantryman, leaves to become a student, to study engineering, meets his future wife, Lola, has a life, kids et al, becomes a civil engineer, offers his services to G.I. Joe on numerous occasions. Duke says, eventually, he's like, Grunt, we need you building stuff more than we need you breaking stuff, so carry on with your life, my man. He eventually becomes the ambassador to Sierra Gordo. Did you guys, I mean, that's information that falls into the IDW run era.
I hope you're not spoiling this entire video. I would like to watch it.
But not only that, but his wife, Lola, was in the armed forces. But we find out later she wasn't just a helicopter mechanic, which was her cover story. She was like some kind of secret agent operative. Because conducts a rescue mission when Grunt is taken hostage by, well, let me not spoil, but yes, in Sierra Gordo, Ambassador Graves gets taken hostage. And they fight from the inside, and Lola fights from the outside, and G.I. Joe comes in and gets involved. But
absolutely, like, just crazy.
In terms of a character arc, that's pretty broad. Like, Snake Eyes, his arc is done by the time we meet him in G.I. Joe. Like, he's gone through Nam, he's lost his parents and his twin, he's done his training. Like, he is fully formed as a character. He's already even started his dalliance with Scarlet by the time we meet him. So, as I say, Grunt's arc, you're going to struggle to find an arc that has more developments on it than that. Maybe Billy. Maybe.
Billy!
I'm not going to spoil Billy's story. Oh, so thank you, JLS Comics. Salute, man.
And thank you for Cordon Hierro for joining us. Franklin, Benitez, who else? Jenna, for your kind words for HCC. And Terrence Childs. Well,
let's get into some happy tidings.
And Terry Turner. It's always cool to see Terry Turner.
Yes, happy times. Happy times.
The photo competition keeps trucking. Whoa. This time with an entry
not the photo competition.
It's a who wins today?
This time, Talking Joe has entered some images. Cool. Yep.
He
had a family trip to the Alps. Get some of that late season skiing, perhaps.
Now or never.
We've got Spirit trying to put a knife through Roadblock with a sort of snowy background. Knife. I guess something's happening here. Maybe it's Zartan dressed up as Spirit or as Roadblock.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's insulting Roadblock's cooking. That's what I think's going on.
Yeah.
You like made one more gum, Joe. Yeah.
Well, it's looking violent.
He's like, Gordon, blow me.
Spirit's got a knife drawn and he's got Roadblock by the throat almost. Yeah, it's
hanging off the cliff.
Brutal.
It's beautiful
stuff.
With some snow in the background.
Roadblock's
as well.
Looking him dead in the eye, going harder.
I'm definitely thinking we've got some. Oh, wait, no. Now we've got an image of Flint in the foreground, scrambling along some rocks while Roadblock is doing some hand to hand with Crocmaster. Looks like Crocmaster's down for the count, but Flint's covering him with a pistol. Just
shoot him in the dick.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to get rid of the evidence, throwing him off the cliff.
What is Crocmaster doing up in the Alps to begin with?
I've just broken something. Smells like almonds. Hello.
I'm trying to get up.
Oh, I believe this is Mark's son, who apparently doesn't go anywhere without bringing some Joes along. Alps notwithstanding. Which, I can
agree
with
that. As we
all
don't do. We all do that. We all take our Joes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, that makes
me feel images. This one. Crocmaster has sent Tiger Force Bazooka. Tiger Force Bazooka, that one. We'll be talking about him in a minute. He's not looking too good. Looks like he's got a broken leg. Oh, brutal what you can do with a classified figure. You can kind of twist their ankles all the way around. Indicate like a foot clearly not on its proper plane of movement, but a lovely depth of focus. Yeah,
Kiwi.
The textures on these rocks are really good.
Wow,
really cool. Kiwi GI Joe and Customs Collection. That reminds me, I'm going to be doing cooking with Roadblock on my channel. Is it going to be like cooking with Scorpion? I hope so. if you know what
awesome.
I mean, then you know what I mean. These shots are amazing. I dig them. They're
beautiful.
Fun.
And letting that
great scenery.
Great scenery, great time of day. Yeah. Awesome. Awesome.
That sky.
Awesome. Just testimony to how great these figures can look. They really sing when you take them outside. I mean, not all of us have access to the Alps, but hopefully we all have access to the sun. And that's awesome. I'm not sure if Mark was taking the pictures or his son was, but regardless, I mean, the work being put into these, the posing, the drama, as we've already said, the setting, very, very cool. Thank you for sharing and pass on our thanks and our congratulations to your boy. We had another photo submission on the back of our Dusty episode. Oh, Paul's got
you guys need one of these, man. Like, get yourself one of these cool little Godox light mounts or something similar where you can change the intensity of the light and the color of the light. It's really going to take your photography game up there. It's going to help you a lot for those situations where you want to shot, but you can't get the light, and you got one of these guys. Not sponsored, by the way. Just really like this kind of product. Carrying right along, sorry.
So, Paul, in our
he's never mentioned this light before.
In our Dusty special last week's podcast episode, we got into the topic of what Dusty looks like without the camo on. Tiger Force Dusty gives us an impression of what he would look like. This is the classic 1988 figure. Paul said he looks a lot like one Russian head of state.
We have
a wonderful collage by Alan Grant, Kiwi living here in
Brisbane. Does Putin ever smile, bro? It's like, I think either this guy has the worst luck with photos. Like, they're like, okay, smile. And he's like, okay. And then they take the photo and he was smiling. They're like, why didn't you smile? And he's like, I was. You know?
But I think folks in the chat, do you think that is a reasonable approximation in plastic?
Yeah, give us your thoughts.
However, Alan has a theory that Dusty without camo paint actually looks a lot more like former Hasbro employee Mark Webber, now working for Valorverse.
Mark Webber, more than meets the eye.
Yeah, it feels like a more plausible. It feels more plausible, this theory, because I mean, I think often they did obviously model the looks of the characters of employees of the company.
Here's the surprise. In 1985, Mark Webber was collecting G.I. Joe, not working on the brand.
Oh, okay. Okay, so that's... Mm. Well, until you said that, it was a more plausible theory.
And Vlad was probably working for the KGB in 85, so I don't think pictures of him were likely to be very common, especially not in the offices of an American
unless toy company. He was inserted into Hasbro and he was one of the sculptors there. He's working undercover.
The likeness is there.
And we don't know where the Cobra Guard came from.
I'm sorry. You know?
Where did that idea come from?
It's the one reason you gave 1985 Dusty a 4 out of 5 in your rating. And I'm gonna challenge that.
Yeah. We weren't
discussing Tiger Force Dusty in terms of the rating. So Paul,
still upsets me. Like, I don't like Dusty's face. I think it looks horrible.
We can't see his face with the paint on it. You know, that's the thing. That's why
That's why he gets 4, man.
All right. So, I'm not gonna die on this hill, but still, I think it's objective.
We want all of our videos where we discuss, you know, these characters have 5 out of 5.
Give everything that we love 4 out of 5. You know, it is possible to love something that gets 4 out of 5. It is possible to love something that gets 1 out of 5. And people with kids, know this.
Oh my goodness! You're letting your hatred cloud your judgment.
All right, boys.
Stop it.
I like lots of bad movies.
This weekend past, guys, we had a wonderful submission on our special forces playlist.
We need to do a Rocky IV with you, Paul.
Cobra Car Wash from Berg Force member Cliff McCarthy. And it is joyous.
Dudes. This thing came out of nowhere, bro. Steve's like, make a thumbnail for this. I'm like, for a car wash. I'm like, is that like a, you know, like a cool code name? And I'm like, no, really is.
It's literally what
it says on the bottle, bro. And it's got some cool water effects. Cliff, yeah. But don't you guys think the water is impressive in this? Like some of the
the scale of the water is clever. Pushing water through like the classic G.I. Joe black rubber hoses, and it looks like a hose pipe. I mean, basically it's a music video, right? In a very kind of 1980s style with working. What's the artist's name?
Both Heroes.
No, Loverboy. Working for the Weeknd.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh God.
Oh, yeah,
that's off the top of my head. I could be wrong. Anyway, I wasn't familiar with the track until this video, and it was
really
jubilant. A really buffed up.
Oh, I remember this from GTA Vice City, I think.
And Zoolander.
Anyway,
Loverboy. You're right, Steven.
He's washing his stun. He's soaping it down. He's scrubbing it. He's hosing it off. And he's got his shirt off, and it's Roadblock's torso underneath. So, no, Road Pig. Road Pig's torso.
Road Pig.
Yeah, but with different arms because they're bare. They don't have like the straps on it. Anyway, he is just this buffed up stun driver adoring his vehicle. And Cliff has come up with various hysterical permutations and ways of using the stun. I mean, at one point, he kind of splits the cabs and lies down in between them. Just classic, classic car wash stuff. Shenanigans, if you will. And the other guys are like, check out this guy. What a joke. But it's glorious. And this is absolutely a very candid moment. Like, Cobras, when they're not toting laser guns and
falling Cobra out of are people going, too, you know. You know, they run their own the evil car washes. It was a lot of fun. I absolutely enjoyed it. I thought it's a great little video. You can start your day off with this thing every day.
Mm-hmm. You know, link is in the description below. So if you haven't seen it,
you know it's a goodie when various members of the Bogue Force send you DMs on different social medias to go, I love Cobra Car Wash.
Well, thank you so much.
This is hilarious.
Yeah. Extend
the invitation to anyone who would like to have a video put up on the channel. I mean, we offer our platform, our modest platform, to G.I. Joe content creators anywhere, really. Just get in touch with us. DM us.
And whenever you see the little thing on the thumbnail, Special Forces, that is us hosting someone else's video, giving someone a chance to kind of just get their creativity out there and just show off how cool their collection is and how cool this, you know, their music choices are.
Yeah. Actually, guys, Cliff's got good music taste. I follow him on Insta. He often posts stories and things like that with various like snippets of tunes. And I'm like, yeah, I dig that. I don't know that. That's cool. So, hey, Bart. Guys, there was
before we move on. Oh. Question for Moonlight.
Too many of us driving.
You do it.
I'll do it. Moonlight 47. If G.I. Joe starts their own, who would lead the way? Wild card or quick kick?
What's the wild card?
Yeah, Paul's favorite character. Wildcard's a good choice because he's just wearing that torn shirt, that torn vest. I mean, it's clearly torn on the sleeves. That's kind of...
He'd actually be quite perfect for it. Yeah, for sure.
Quick kick. Yeah, that would be a kind of 80s franchise. Kung Fu Car Wash or something. Karate Car Wash. Like, everyone would be themed.
Or you could use the road pig body again, and you can use DJ. I think that'd be quite fun.
Wait a minute. Would that imply that DJ is wearing blackface?
No. Maybe. I don't know. I wanted the road pig body. I thought that looked cool.
That would be super weird.
Do we have it? I mean, is there a buff, like, you know, like shirtless character in Joe? I don't think there is. Is there?
Shirtless.
Belrog.
Belrog could work. Okay, well, there we go. Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Moonlight. Yeah, use the Balrog body. Okay, so I just need Balrog and we can get that video.
Moonlight's got it. He's got our back. Use the Belrog body for DJ.
Hell yeah.
I still think he's wearing blackface because DJ's got that awkward thing where the flesh tone is painted. It's not the plastic color.
Oh no.
It always looks a little bit off, a little bit too shiny.
And his features.
I haven't looked close enough on my DJ to realize that, actually.
We know.
Gosh darn it.
Don't do it. Just leave that figure in the bag.
That's going to be one of our spotlight episodes one day.
If I ever buy a DJ.
Oh yeah, you don't have a DJ.
Staring in the face for $25, but it's missing the antenna. So I'm like,
you can't buy it then. You need the antenna. Come on.
You do. You need that crappy figure in all his complete glory.
So guys,
Bart wants us to move on because don't speak of DJ here. He says,
move on, agreed. Guys. Before we get to Cobra Commander issue,
Paul
4,
is excited of an incredible trailer that came out this week.
There has been a little piece of internet that has happened. Yeah, no, there was a trailer that dropped. Also, I just want to throw this out there, guys. Ghostbusters Afterlife is great. It's a great little family movie. Go and check it out. Don't listen to
the one that came out 3 years ago. Sure.
No, not Afterlife. Sorry, Frozen Empire. It's a fun little romp. It was a cool. I enjoyed it. It was a cute film. I'm not saying it's the best film ever. It's just, it's a cute, fun film. It's a bit safe, though. That's my only criticism. Guys, the Transformers trailer dropped the other day. Transformers 1. Now, I'm going to start. I'm going to be cool here. I know that this is made for kids. Please don't tell me in the comments that it looks like it's made for kids. I know it's made for kids. But, oh my God, this is what I imagine it's like at Hasbro. Hasbro's like, let's go to social marketing and media. What do our analytics say? Sir, the analytics say that everybody really wants a Transformers film set on Cybertron. That would be awesome. Yes, a serious adventure on Cybertron would be great for the Transformers film franchise. Cybertron. I know, we'll make a dumb kids movie set on Cybertron with buddies Optimus Prime and Megatron. Yes! Sir, shut up! We're making a movie! They have made the most lowest common denominating safe version of that story they could have done, and it pisses me off unbelievably. Sorry, just have to rant. Like, oh my word, why, Hasbro? Like, I get that you're going for kids, but as a kid, I would think it's stupid. It looks like it's made for the same audience that watches Barney for 5 6. Ah, what a missed opportunity. Anyway, file that one under shit, because it's going to be the trailer. It was difficult to get through the trailer. I was like, this is so boring. Anyway, let's turn like Optimus Prime from being a nerd to being a working class guy. Yes, everybody wants a Bruce Springsteen the shit. Let's not make Megatron the cool. Megatron is actually the cool guy in his past. And Optimus is the nerd. And the whole point of him being a nerd and becoming Optimus is cool. Anyway, looks like shit. Who's with me? Oh, everybody. Okay, let's move along.
Angry fanboy rant. Well, I don't know. I'll be there watching it with my 3-year-old because that's
awesome. Because Bluey looks
that's the target better. Market. But Bluey, yeah, I better. Think. I think there are a lot of people excited for this. I think they're just happy to get any Transformers sometimes, you know.
The guys, even if it's
even if obviously it isn't, you know, in line with what they've established before, you know, like with what their original, you know, like setup was before everything. But yeah, it is a weird move. I think they obviously saw there's a lot of interest in films added at a younger audience.
Sorry, Rob. Darren, thank you. No. Carry on, Rob. Sorry, my dude.
You got to do the trailer voice. You saw them fighting on Earth. You saw them fighting on Cybertron. Now get the real story of how they hung out together as kids and annoyed the real enemy. Old people. Thank you, Darren.
Well, it fits with a trend. I mean, they've done it with Star Wars. They've gone back and done a Youngling show.
Yeah, they're like making
all the brands. Shit. You know, Mario's making, and they've made the Mario animated movie. They did Sonic cool, in the last couple of years. Yeah, they hit and missed, but they're obviously trying to take an established brand and aim it at a younger market.
Of the three things that you've mentioned, two of those people wanted to make a good movie. The other one wants to make money. I'll let you figure out which one is which.
I'm not saying I'm looking forward to this at all. I mean, I definitely can see.
No, you're being devil's advocate, which I appreciate.
Yeah, you know, and Steven's being a dad. You know, he's like, I'll take my kid to see it. You know, and this is the way I get him into Transformers.
Very sheepishly, I enjoyed the trailer because I identified very quickly. What its objectives were. To make a sort of family-friendly Transformers movie. And I'm like, I'm here for that. I like the designs. The action looks fun. The scripting is kinetic and, you know, there's a lot of good balance between these characters.
I suppose they don't all look the same.
Well, for a long time Transformers fans, there will be Easter eggs worth picking out of this. Like, clearly getting to see Quintessons and seeing the relationship between Megatron and Optimus Prime, even if it's candy coated and family friendly, there will be some care given to penning them as former nemeses. I mean, there's that one throwaway line where Optimus says, "You're gonna be the death of me," to Megatron, which is, there's a barb there, and that's riffing on Transformers the movie, 1987. Is it 87? 86. Whenever Transformers the movie came out. Anyway, yeah, bottom line is, 89. I'm convinced that the writers of this know what they're doing. They're just packaging it very safely. And no, I'm genuinely going to take interest in watching this movie. So, Paul,
dude, I'm
you can
AI
watch all the Ghostbusters you want, my friend. But this is tickling
Steve,
my
movie. I'm actually surprised coming from you. I'm surprised of that coming from you because
I'm not
firstly,
as precious
all
with
the
Transformers.
I really. You're not that precious about Transformers? Okay.
Absolutely not.
They all look
I can't endure any of the Michael Bay ilk. But
yeah,
Transformers has my attention.
I just think they were going in such a cool direction. And when I saw the Transformers 1 trailer, I was like, oh, cool. It's going to be like something interesting. Like, oh, it's going to be set in Cybertron. That's cool. And then I saw it and I was like, okay. It's Turner and Hooch in space.
Paul, your expectations were set
that looks the same.
At War for Cybertron video game. You want that story brought to the big screen and you're not going to rest.
Well, that's what we deserve. But they keep giving us shit.
They need to print money, buddy.
Well, thankfully, they have compromised and we are going to get a Transformers G.I. Joe movie. So we'll see.
I believe that when I see it. I believe it when I'm sitting in the theater because, yeah.
You know, for sure. But I'm pretty sure they said that it's still happening. It's a coming.
They're doubling down on that and tripling down on that. But
it's definitely coming, guys.
It still doesn't take away from the fact that, like, the tacked on ending for Transformers, was it Rise of the Beasts? No, that's the most recent one.
Well, that's happening. That's officially
Beast
happening.
Beast Wars. I don't know what that movie was.
Whatever the sting was at the end was pretty slapdash and not fully thought through at all. Like, it was a tease for the sake of tease. It was the sort of the most nothingness reveal of all time. It's like, we got these two properties. Let's put in a sting a la MCU movies of old. Anyway.
Well, I'm glad that our audiences have gotten, you know, different points of view here. You know, we got the more reasoned, objective view of Paul. And we have, like, the dad view.
Thanks,
of
Rob.
Steven. You know, he's ready to be entertained. He's going to take his son.
I'm ready to eat a lot of popcorn.
You know, he's going to really eat a lot of popcorn. Any excuse to get out of the house with his kid. Before we move on from movie news, a cool thing that I think is happening for Comic-Con Cape Town, which is an event that's happening next weekend, which I'll be exhibiting at with my comic shop. One of the guests announced, or at least it'll be on one of the panels there, is Andrew Koji, who played Storm Shadow in Snake Eyes.
Shit, please. Oh, damn.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have met Andrew Koji.
And I didn't know a lot about him before actually doing some more research. I mean, he's been in a ton of things. He was in an absolutely incredible series called Warrior. Shot in Cape Town, yes. The same as the movie that they'll be discussing called Boy Kills World. Check the trailer out. It actually looks
really
good.
Can't wait for that. I think I sent you guys the trailer.
And excitingly for me as well, he was the English voice actor for one of the major characters in one of the Final Fantasy XIV expansions, Stormblood.
Yeah.
Where he played one of the main characters from that expansion. I'm hoping to check out that panel. I know he's not doing signings or autographs, or at least so far they haven't confirmed that. I mean, it's days to go, but I think they're only there for this panel. But I hope I can meet him. Seems like a really cool guy. Very determined guy who wants to be in the entertainment industry. He produced, wrote, I think directed, edited many shorts of himself, kind of like in his earlier years. So he's very much a passionate martial artist and filmmaker. So I'm looking forward to meeting this dude.
And probably the best thing of that Snake Eyes movie, to be honest.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm hoping if they do Transformers G.I. Joe movie, he will come back as
Storm Shadow. Yeah.
Though,
would be freaking cool.
I mean, no points for guessing. Paul's boy, Storm Shadow, is the best part of not only the Snake Eyes movie, but Rise of Cobra and Retaliation.
Yeah.
Perfectly cast. Yeah.
They keep casting him well, you know?
Also, and I also just, I want to make a mention of it because it was mentioned here in the chat, but the Fallout TV series is amazing. Absolutely loved it. Still, I actually want to watch it again. That's how much I loved it. I'm a big fan of the game, so I just felt that it rung right. And yeah, it's just great when people really care about what they're doing, care about the franchise, care about the fans of the franchise. And then you get something like Fallout. It's really good. It's really, really fantastic. Loving it.
I think I need to expose myself to some gameplay before I watch episode 2, because episode 1 had things that I liked and things that I didn't like. And I think it'll be more sense will be made of this world if I see what a Fallout game actually plays like.
Yeah, that's the one criticism. I've seen of the series. It is opaque to a certain degree to people who have no knowledge of the Fallout universe. But I think the knowledge to play watch Fallout is very basic. You know, you have to understand there's an apocalypse. There's essentially two factions. Depending on where you are in America. But yeah, also I've only played Fallout 3, Fallout New Vegas. I've played some of 1 and 2.
You played the two best games.
Yep. Well, there you go. Definitely check it out. And speaking of video games, I believe you guys got a chance to play a brand new video game recently.
Well, Stephen did.
Stephen got to play a brand new game.
Am I the only one who played the Wrath of Cobra?
You are the only person that's played.
I was
on PlayStation Store. I'm not going to play it on my PC, bro.
Whoa.
I play games on my computer.
Well, PlayStation.
I'm a console gamer. If I play games on my PC, then I've got games on everything. I need a break from stuff.
So. Yeah, when he's on his PC, he's taking a break from
I work on my PC. I don't want to play. I work on my PC and I make art on my PC. I need a break from it. I can't play games here. Otherwise, I'll sit and die in this chair. So, yeah.
Okay. Steven. Even if it means not playing a G.I. Joe game. Look, guys.
Even if it means.
I cobbled together some notes somewhere. I wasn't.
Can't help himself.
I've got some things to say about it from the trailer's point of view.
Look, it's pretty mid. I mean, if.
Yeah, I can tell you that immediately from the trailer.
So, what is this game for? What is this game called before we move too much further? I've said
G.I. Joe Wrath of Cobra. It's available on Steam. The demo is playable now. There are two levels. One is set on the Cobra mothership or airship. The other is set on a castle, a Cobra castle. In the first chapter or stage, you face up against, among other things, Baroness, the Hiss tank, various Cobra troops like blue shirts that come down from jump jetpacks and Viper gliders, Crimson Guards that are able to kind of like teleport themselves. I didn't know that was a Crimson Guard ability, but fun, whatever.
Now it is.
It's a pretty straight down the line beat 'em up. The combat is hugely weighted towards just fisticuffs. You can pick up guns and fire them 5 times before throwing them, which is an absolute staple of that genre, which is kind of a criticism of mine because, you know, G.I. Joe are weapons experts. They don't run into a castle and just punch people. I kind of wanted it more heavily weighted towards gunplay, but I suppose we've gotten that in the past from G.I. Joe. Like the Rise of Cobra video game is just like a shoot fest. And Operation Blackout was also another like just...
Shoot fest.
So it's fun. And this will probably become...
You spelled shit wrong.
This will probably like really come into its own in the multiplayer because you can play up to 4 players. I think maybe more. So it's got that going for it. I think it
so
is.
It's
a
got a retro 2D style to it. It's not like 3D. It actually looks like Streets of Rage.
It does.
So I was going to say
the sprites are smaller. The character sprites are smaller, so it's more in line with Captain America and the Avengers
and Turtles.
Yep. The moves don't seem as explosive or as varied, but the sound effects are crunchy. You get like pop up, like kablam, kapows, you know, onomatopoeia on screen. One commentator said it's very retro 80s. I would argue with that. While it does use all the designs from the 80s, it's very much a 90s presentation. The graphics, the soundtrack, it's very much feels like DIC G.I. Joe era. You know, got to get tough sort of thing.
There are 4 things I can say about this game based on the trailer. And I'm basing my knowledge here on the trailer. The first thing that they should do is on the Sky Striker, there is a line around the G.I. Joe logo They should take that out. It looks shit. Guys, it's not difficult to do. Okay. Secondly, what Steven said now, it being very like average, I can see that from the trailer. Now, this is not dissing the guys who made it, because making games is hard. I just think that while it might look like stuff like Turtles, and while it might look like Streets of Rage, it doesn't, to me, it doesn't seem like it has a good fighting system. It seems like it has a very straightforward, very boring fighting system. It seems like, it also seems like the enemies use the same animation set as the main characters, which is also kind of a bummer. Doesn't make them look interesting. It doesn't make your main character stand out enough. And the sound effects and stuff are good, but I can also tell when you punch, there's that flatness. There isn't a bounce and a crunch to your punching animation. Like, that's something that Turtles and Streets of Rage do really well. And also, not spoken about enough, the new Double Dragon Gaiden, which is also incredibly good. And so that's my only issue with it. Like, I feel like it just doesn't seem to be bouncy enough. It's not giving cool feedback loop from the trailer that I've seen. I will play the demo. I will most likely buy the game. I want to support the company that makes a game of something I love. And I got to say, it looks infinitely better than most of the G.I. Joe games we've had since the year 2000.
Well, thankfully, I mean, they have brought it out in such a degree that, yes, it sounds like they've released two stages. You know, we get to see the art style of the game. I mean, I've seen some cool screenshots. I mean, the characters generally look very accurate and very varied to obviously what we, you know, understand G.I. Joe to be. The backgrounds are very colorful. It's nice to see a lot of variety in the enemies that you're fighting from what I've seen of the game. And yes, with them only having released two stages, this does give them a chance to obviously hear people's feedback. You know, they'll get the reviews on Steam, they'll get people's videos, they'll look at all of it. And it's a period, hopefully, for them to, you know, kind of like go into the final version of the game, polishing the stage and actually taking in people's criticisms. Especially because, I mean, as Steven said, we are used to G.I. Joe shooting, you know, if it is very much a beat 'em up, then you kind of almost have to change the roster of characters that you're using to ones that you would be more expectant to be beat 'em up characters. You know, obviously Snake Eyes, you put Scarlet in there, you put Quick Kick in there, the guy with the nunchucks.
Well, the playable character roster for the demo, you can either play as Duke or Scarlet. Nice. Hold Snake Eyes in reserve. But I think the full list would be Snake Eyes, Gung Ho, Roadblock, and Ripcord.
Oh, interesting.
I think, you know what would be cool? Like, what I think would be cool as well in the combos, if it's like punch, like if it's Scarlet, she could go punch, punch. Then all of a sudden she's got the crossbow in her hand, doing like an uppercut with that, and then crossbow kind of thing as part of the combo.
Yeah, and I think it's in line with like cartoons. They can do they can do the shooty gun. You can pick it up as an extra. I think it is kind of fine that you could still expand the roster. They don't have to be purely the kung fu or the martial arts guys. So you do have those sections in the cartoons where they do end up having to do fisticuffs. So removing their guns to a certain degree, I think, can also still make sense, you know, as I'm arguing.
Do the Marvel vs. Capcom thing. When there's characters in like 2D fighting games that are primarily gun characters, they find ways to make the gun interesting for a super move.
Gun as the final move, like 1, 2, 3, as you said.
It could have been an interesting
special move. I think as they go ahead, they can probably do that. And they can take inspiration from a lot of the really good beat 'em ups that have come, you know, out, obviously, of the last couple
guns.
Years. With guns.
Yeah, if you are Punisher wasn't bad. It was actually very well designed and very well balanced with the gun combat stuff.
That's the best example. Elliot, while we've got you, what did you think of that video game yesterday?
Hello, Ellie.
It was so small. Yeah. We want bigger character sprites, please.
Big games. Yeah. And maybe, big people.
I mean, it all moved along one plane. Something that I miss with beat 'em up games is the lack of platforming. You're just walking. You're walking from start to finish. And while it's fun, you see lots of Easter eggs. Like at one point on the Cobra mothership, you're walking past clearly the tail fin of a Night Raven drone. Love that. Love that. What else did we see? At the Cobra castle, you face off a kind of a mid-level boss of a snake armor. It's trying to smash you with this hammer fist. Lovely, lovely stuff. deep cuts like the Cobra Bazooka Trooper from the 25th anniversary line, you know, the one with the kind of mesh on his helmet and then RPG. Yeah. They have those
as a trooper. And the Avengers. And
the tan colored Cobra Troopers, they throw sticks of dynamite. Like, they're having fun with their trooper classes.
I can see that's the cool stuff.
Night Vipers, Alley Vipers, etc. But I could be wrong. There definitely was an Easter egg of a Cobra Invader in the trailer. We didn't see it in the gameplay that they dropped. The demo gameplay. You have an owie. Oh dear. Do you want to see?
No.
I'm gonna talk to my friends some more.
I was sore. I hope you figure that out, Elliot.
Figure it out.
And Will, this what you've put forward here, hoping that this leads into an open world G.I. Joe game. That is an idea I think that we've pitched many times over the years. I think we had at least one episode where we were like, this is the type of game that we wish we could get as a G.I. Joe game. Yeah, open world GTA or Metal Gear Solid 5 in a way as well. Game where you can kind of just infiltrate bases, you can take stuff on, you can take your vehicles out there, you go out and do your whatever you want to the G.I. Joes, but in the open world style. That's definitely something that the type of game, I think the ultimate version of G.I. Joe that we've always wanted. For show.
Don't worry, Hasbro will eventually listen.
They're still in the works, and we've seen publicity on it, so it's in all likelihood going to happen. There is a G.I. Joe AAA title. Those are the words being bandied about. So hopefully we're going to get that. This is just a bit of fun to tide us over. And
to be honest, I think so.
I'm delighted that G.I. Joe is as a video game. I can play this with my wife.
it's a cool game that looks very accessible as well. The beat 'em up genre is a very easy genre to get into, long as the gameplay is rewarding and interesting and varied, it doesn't even matter if you are a fan of G.I. Joe or not. It is a game that people will play, and if you get the game, the more people get their eyes on G.I. Joe, the more people know about G.I. Joe, and the more they'll start, you know, like wondering, oh, what is G.I. Joe? We can get them at the toys, get them into the cartoons, into the awesome Transformers G.I. Joe movie starring Andrew Koji, and maybe get them into the comic books.
Yeah.
Like the one we'll be talking about right now. I mean, obviously Moonlight, kids can't read this one, but maybe the adults, their parents can read this one.
Moonlight 47 goes, would asking for a soul-style G.I. Joe be a bit much? Yes, it would be. Not because I think it's implausible or unfeasible, but because the G.I. Joe brand is currently in a place where they're trying to attract new market. It's in like a new market phase. So they're going to do as much as they can to kind of catch the, let's call it the common denominator.
As wide a net as possible. So that's why Beat 'em Up is a good choice as an entry game.
Yeah, exactly.
Or open world GTA types game. I think a Souls type game would be fantastically fun to play.
I think it'd be very cool. And if G.I. Joe, if Hasbro were the kind of company that, you know, looked after G.I. Joe and kept it as a niche product and looked after its niche fan base and tried to reward its niche fan base with all this interesting stuff, or G.I. Joe had become super, super popular and they had the money for special projects, we might even get something like that. I mean, we got War for Cybertron, which is arguably the best Transformers game. Not arguably, it is the best Transformers game ever made ever, and one of the best versions, ways to enjoy Transformers. And that was because it was at the height of Transformers popularity. They were like, you guys make this cool thing. Go for it. We'll make a toy line to go with it. We'll make money. Ha ha ha. Go. But now Transformers needs to make money again, they're like, oh, we're going to play it safe. Let's make everybody look the same. We'll call that one Megatron or Optimus. I don't know. They all look the same. Anyway, carry on.
The knights that say niche. Thank you, Bart.
Yeah.
We're all wannabe French here in the Commonwealth.
Absolutely. Last word on this.
I only know its pronunciation is niche. When I hear niche, that sounds wrong to me.
G.I. Joe has to get kids back interested, or else we're the end of the line. And it looks like it might be the end of the line for Cobra Commander in issue 4 of the Skybound Cobra Commander miniseries. Or is it? Last issue we ended off with the
Globulus. I mean, Nemesis.
Sorry. Nemesis Enforcer basically rescuing Cobra Commander, but read ahead, true believers.
If you don't want to be spoiled, perhaps stop listening right now.
Yep, you might standard miss disclaimer
on the way out, but maybe for the next 15 minutes, mute your audio.
wish you would mute your audio.
Like something that I only noticed on the reread is that Cobra Commander is wiping off the bloody smile that was on his faceplate.
It's a nice little manhandle ripper. Yeah. He's not keeping that around. And we get to see what the Dreadnoughts have been doing with the Energon that they've been siphoning off or kind of like producing and using. And their depravity knows no bounds.
Looking like a boss.
Yeah, I mean, for sure.
The language that he uses with Ripper, who he leaves behind on the surface, but he says he offers a very calm warning. It is in your best interest to stay here. The implication is, if you run, Ripper, we will catch you and we will make it very painful.
Things will happen. Like,
yeah, don't move a muscle, mate. You're better off just waiting here for me.
And this is Cobra Commander telling someone who regularly tortures people and takes joy in throwing people, you know, to drag them behind his car and, you know, kind of rip them to pieces, as it were. And he's taking this man seriously when he tells him to stay put. Mm-hmm. And Cobra Commander goes underground and he discovers that the Dreadnoughts have kidnapped a scientist of some sort, an unnamed scientist, I believe. I don't remember seeing him named by anyone in the issue.
I actually wanted to ask you guys who you thought this would be, but carry on when there's a bit of a reveal.
He's very grateful, and he's been working very hard on what the Dreadnoughts have given him access to here. He's been developing weapons for them. He's been refining, he's kind of like made the Energon supply that they have go much further than it could possibly have gone without his help. And well, yep, Darren nailed it. That's definitely my guess at this point of the story. It's a Dr. Scruffy Bender. was that your guess too, Paul?
Hold on, Rob. You're like, who's cruising through this book? Because you're like cruising. Slow down, bro.
I know. Stephen is doing visuals as we talk. There's no connection between and our talk.
Okay, no, because like let's just like take 2 seconds to talk because the like this doctor. Looks like, firstly, there's a doctor in the cartoon that looks a lot like this guy, which I feel like they reference. And also the doctor in the video game in Atlantis Factor.
Oh.
The scientist that helps looks a little bit like this guy for some reason. In my mind, I could be wrong, but I keep thinking that doctor looks like this doctor. But it could actually, for all I know, it could be a Transformers reference as well.
It might be.
Because I don't think this is Mindbender.
My brain automatically went to Mindbender, but I think by the end of it, he's too nice. Although, I mean, in his file card, you know, Mindbender is set up as a nice person before he's kind of like mind broken, becomes his Mindbender persona.
Yes. Hold on. Moonlight offers a suggestion in the chat. He says Dr. Monev. I'm going to Google that.
Oh. Maybe that's the name of the guy from Atlantis Factor and you've forgotten.
Oh, that's easy for me to forget. I'm more worried about the remembering how to find the pill for
what I mean?
Dr. Monev, maybe before he gets a haircut.
Who is Dr. Monev for those who do not know, Paul?
So every time I type in Dr. Monev, I keep getting pictures of Dr. Venom.
Which is random. Well, it is Venom.
Which
backwards.
Makes sense because, yes, thank you. but I can't seem to find any... I can't seem to find the name of that character. It's just random scientist, probably something.
I'm sure
somebody in the chat will bring it out or somebody will mention it. But yeah, I feel like this is a small deep cut to something else in the media. Steve, what say you, my dude?
Would you just like, I'd say I'm pacifying a 3-year-old who wants to play with the mauler. Yeah. When I say it was a G.I. Joe heavy weekend, not only were we playing Wrath of Cobra together, but he's into it, man. He's into the vintage toys. And that means Daddy's cupboard is now his playground.
Ooh, full access.
Oh, holla, bro.
Well, we see how the Energon is being processed by this doctor into the cubes. So there's our explanation for why it's always in these handy cubes.
These cube shapes.
Forms. It's actually a kind of a reduced form of Energon. It's less potent, but it's just, I suppose, more easily consumed. He's able to expand on their production by making more cubes out of less Energon. Yeah, exactly. It's been cut. And that's why it kind of is easy to handle for the Dreadnoks, as far as I can tell.
He's making the smaller amount of it last longer. Exactly. Darren, I'm not taking away from your scruffy bender. I think it's a good name. Now, it might be Scruffy Bender.
I was curious as to why Cobra Commander wasn't using his Insecticon drones. I'm going to call them Insecticon drones, even though they haven't been named as such on the page. It's clear.
Well, it becomes a lot more obvious within the next few panels.
They were out of power. They were out of juice, but they love the Energon cube.
Mm.
And they become...
And their forms become a lot more obvious. I mean, they are actually differentiated. These are very much Insecticon droids. You can actually see there is a difference. I hadn't noticed this in the earlier issues, that there is actually a differentiation between the ones that he has. It's a nice reference.
So that's cool.
Mm. Mm. Good morning, Frostbite. Jojo Repro.
Hey, Frostbite.
So
don't take away my scruffy bender. Okay, Dr. Darren, we won't.
Guys, I want to revisit the debate that we might have had in issue one. Where we were talking about Cobra Commander's motivations. Yeah, go ahead. Is he altruistic and he wants to strive for the betterment of Cobra Law? Or does he have his own agenda? We kind of dance between the two ideas that maybe he's secretly planning to overthrow Golobulus, that he's not loyal to Golobulus. He's loyal to his idea of Cobra Law, and he wants to insert himself as the leader of Cobra Law. All of a sudden, I'm thrown into doubt here. I feel like Cobra Commander is loyal to Cobra Law and Golobulus, because right to the very end of this issue, he is using that kind of language.
Oh, absolutely. I think
the conversation to himself. It might have that much more lofty. Like
it hurts more, I think, for you as you read it, because I think it has been to a certain degree ambiguous to this point. You can kind of feel like he is definitely doing this for himself. But you can also feel like he is doing it for Globulus, but also, you know, there's a middle road where he's playing everyone. But I think this issue does make it very obvious that he really does believe in Cobra Law and the future of Cobra Law and being a part of it and making it a force, you know, to reckon with across the world. And the betrayal that he faces now from Nemesis Enforcer and by extension Globulus actually really hurts him. And this is the turning point in his character, actually. Where he really does become more himself and more the version of the character that I think the Energon universe needs going forward. You know, the version of him that is now on this quest to, you know, take over the world, essentially. And he has his reasons for doing that now.
Well put, Rob, because I also feel like it's very easy to get clouded by your current, by us as fans, by our current understanding of Cobra Commander, and then putting that version into this version, and he's not that guy yet. You know, this is
I think it's very easy to do that.
Year one Cobra Commander. yeah,
and what made that easier is because of our former understanding. But I think that's cool that it kind of plays with your understanding of who you think Cobra Commander is. You know.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the fun thing. It's like we get to see this take on him, we get to evolve him, and he's so well done that we do still imprint a modern version of him in there. But it also is cool that we see in Cobra Commander, while he's still maybe a bit more vulnerable as well, and I don't mean vulnerable like vulnerable as in like, oh, he's still a nothing. I mean like vulnerable emotionally, he's still naive, you know.
Yes. Though the naivety obviously is his loyalty to an evil, you know, bioorganic organized, you know, like society versus
that thinks they're better than human beings
to kill
anyway.
The humans, but still there is a vulnerability within him.
He's certainly not to be vulnerable. I mean, he stands toe-to-toe with Nemesis Enforcer, who's been dismembering no-name dreadnoughts left, right, and center, and he takes a hell of a beating. This on top of the fact that he was given a torture session from the dreadnoughts before this, and turns the tables by using his tech, using the Insecticons. He's got an ace up his sleeve. After he first takes a run-up with Buzz's chainsaw. That didn't work out too well. Gets
nice nice callback there.
Yeah.
Sorry, Steve. You were flying through that, but the way that he like hits Nemesis Enforcer there, it's a cool callback to the film.
Yes.
And to when Buzzer goes at him earlier. Well, yeah, anyway, we'll go into that later. But yeah. Sorry, man, carry on. Steve, I derailed you a bit. My apologies.
No, I just wanted to say that he uses the tech to blast Nemesis Enforcer, and I'm wondering, is the implication that Nemesis Enforcer is dead?
Maybe seriously injured. Probably not dead, though. I don't... Yeah. Well, he slowed down enough to be incapacitated long enough for Cobra Commander to get away and obviously get to where he's going to next. Yeah, a spoon killer says he Tony Starks him. It's a very cool
There's a panel in the book where Cobra Commander is shooting this like beam up and it's cutting into Nemesis. And it's such a beautiful panel in the book. When you see it,
it's gorgeous.
It's the yellow and blue one, or the cyan and yellow one, which is just...
Yeah, it's a full page, yeah.
Yeah.
It's absolutely gorgeous. And also...
Rob, go for it.
No, go for it. Paul.
I just wanted the ripping of the face mask of Cobra Commander's faceplate. Like, we have had literally a whole issue of the dreadnoughts trying to take that off. And Nemesis Enforcer's just like, I'll take that, and grabs it and pulls it off Cobra Commander's face. And that is insane. That shows you how strong
no anti-tamper plastic explosives on that helmet. But it does seem to have this emanation as it pulls off of Cobra Commander's face. Now, plastic mirror face visage being ripped off like that and presumably destroyed. Are we set to see a return of the hood? Could this comic book get away with it in its final issue?
No, I don't think so. I think he might have just have this kind of head wrapping that he has on now, or he will get another hood. I mean, face
another
plate.
Mirror.
Do you think we will get this one?
Oh, the
helmet?
The helmet
and the handkerchief?
No, that's
on Sigma 6. Wouldn't that be cool? No, but Hasbro will probably go, yes, we want that look back. We like that one. It's very good.
No, I think hooded... Hasbro has made it very, very obvious that there is no rendition of Cobra Commander that they are putting out that will have the hood. Like, there is no version of it. Hooded is completely out. Verboten.
I understand they have their reasons. That's fine. I just hope we don't get the handkerchief face one. That's all, because that's lame.
I think for the final issue, he'll be like this. He'll have this kind of wrapping around his head, and that's about it. But it's cool. I mean, like we were saying, where he rips the mask off. I mean, up to the last minute, you're still establishing how strong Nemesis Enforcer is, you know, to the last second. And, like, it really is something, you know, extreme from Cobra Commander that does take him out. And also the conversation between him and Nemesis Enforcer also, I think, finally does bring it. Cobra Commander does realize that he has no place in the Cobra Law hierarchy. Like, there is just something about him that is just too alien, you know, and his approach to technology and to power and how his philosophy of life and science and stuff like that is too alien to the conception of that for Cobra Law, because Nemesis Enforcer is like, your metal, your reliance on metal is disgusting to me. I cannot live with this, and neither can anyone else in Cobra Law.
But yeah, there's also
a war of words that happened. I mean, Cobra Commander says it's my home, and Nemesis Enforcer is like, it was never your home. you were always an outsider, and now we've got this doctor. Yeah. We don't need you. So goodbye with your blasphemous metal. So the betrayal really stings. We've discovered something that Cobra Commander actually cares about. Like, that's quite a rarity with a character who's penned often as flippant as Cobra Commander, this comic booky villain. He believed, and now he's been cast aside. And that's what gives him the strongest of motivations to formulate his own army.
Napoleon effect.
And come back.
Yeah, like, which I think is fantastic. We actually get a really cool origin story for Cobra Commander, you know, and I think I was saying earlier as well, with also within the Energon universe, this is the motivating point for him, you know, going forward. And it's cool to actually see that moment happen, you know, as opposed to we've always been told, you know, he was a car salesman, you know, he had a change of philosophy, and he kind of just became Cobra Commander. We actually get to see it, and I think that's really cool. And it's not like we're humanizing Cobra Commander, like overly humanizing him or making him, you know, into a like always a misunderstood villain, you know, and we learned, you know, he's still a villain, but we actually get to see that moment where he becomes, you know, who we know him to be, which I think is really cool.
It's like
I wouldn't dance around that. I think it does humanize him. I think we're very much on side with
him. I think it doesn't make him like a misunderstood villain. You know, we totally get his intentions are villainous. But I'm saying like humanizing as in like we're not on his side. We're not like, oh, now we totally understand why you want to kill everyone on Earth.
At the end, of course, while Cobra Commander now has access to the Energon supply, he's been tipped off that the major buyer for this power source is none other than Mars. So he's now, I suppose, scheduled to have his date with Destiny, or date with Destro, which is...
Destiny.
It was inevitable, but it feels like both parties are bringing something to the meeting. You know, Destro's got weapons, but they're running out of juice. You know, they're too ambitious for modern power systems. Cobra Commander has this mystical stuff.
Yeah.
And would you say those are Mobats and his tanks that Destro is making? Because it's Mobat-ish.
Well, that would be in line with Destro's philosophy that he sells to both sides. Absolutely. In the big reveal of Destro standing before his production line, there is definitely a his tank chassis, but there are far more green battle tanks. Very conventional. Kind of conventional. They've got like the split in the middle, which is like a Command and Conquer affectation, I think. But very much a green army tank. So it could be Mobat. G.I. Joe's
and
going to be built by Destro. Crazy.
Swinging back to CC quickly, sort of dropped it earlier as well. Like, it's the Napoleon effect. You know, Napoleon is cast out of society. Well, society shuns him. They don't like him. So his solution to that is not to like, and I actually kind of agree with this. His solution is not necessarily like, oh, I'm just going to play nice and be what everybody wants me to be. He's like, no, I'm going to make sure I'm the boss, and then you can kiss my ass. Yeah. And I'm not saying that's a good philosophy, but that's Cobra Commander here. He's like, okay, so like, Cobra Law doesn't dig me. I wouldn't be surprised if the first thing he tries to take over is Cobra Law, and conquers Cobra Law first. I think that would be kind of cool.
I mean, you don't just establish Cobra Law and not do anything with it afterwards. And Spirit Killers has said in the comments, his origin will always be disgruntled businessman who decides to burn down the world. That is way scarier than a snake dude.
I agree.
Not to take anything away from his original origin, I'm just saying I think in this context, within the Energon universe, this origin works for this version of Cobra Commander. I think they obviously in the original version, I mean, there's a lot of mystery there. It's more scary. Yes, I think where it's someone completely ordinary becomes the leader of a terrorist organization. Like, there is no, you know, specific reason why he did this. I mean, I think like in the real world, real evil isn't necessarily reason why it becomes that way, why it does what it does. It just does it for its own personal reasons. So I'm not saying that the original origin is that this origin is better than the original. I'm saying that I think this origin that I've set up here works really well for what they're doing in this version of G.I. Joe.
I like that as well. I've always loved that concept, and I'm loving this version of it as well. I think it's a very, very cool take. I think it's going to be great because Golobulus and Cobra Law have already made Cobra Commander feel like, well, you don't belong here. So they already kind of got like a bit of a speciesist kind of trait as well, because, you know, he's also human, and they also kind of get into they don't like human beings either. So in a weird way, as human beings, Cobra Commander going in there and kicking Golobulus in the nuts is kind of like a heroic thing to do in some respects, you know, because they actually also, in some ways, they're kind of a greater evil than Cobra Commander. So it's very good writing when you can take a villain, kind of get on his side a little bit before the wheels come off. And which is why I specifically like referenced Napoleon as well. Yeah, but anyway, this was a great issue. Maybe, I don't know. What do you guys think? Are we going to give it a rating? Of course we are.
Cobra Commander's got Ripper like his dog. He's got a chain around his neck. Guys, this is probably my favoritist of the all. My favoritist.
Wow.
But yeah, I'm really digging this retelling of Cobra Commander. Car salesman be damned. Like, this is where my instincts always led me with Cobra Commander, that you need to incorporate the Cobra Law element, but making him this outsider makes sense. And now he's got strong motivation to just come back and dominate everyone. This is great. And he's hard as hell. Let's not look past the fact that he's held his own in combat with Royal Guards, with Nemesis Enforcer. Like, he can handle himself in a fight. This ain't no coward who hides behind his troops, though he can now. I mean, once he amasses an army, he should you know, advance to the rear and be the commander that he should be.
Sure, he can lead if he wants to.
Break into his throne room, he's like, come at me, bitches, I'm gonna Insecticon your ass.
I'll be the last boss, like, it'll be cool. Something I keep neglecting to mention is just because sometimes we go through these books quite quickly, but I loved Serana's compassion, and I love that they made Xandar kind of a dick. And I thought that was kind of clever characterization, because even today, Xandar's got his fans, but a lot of people don't really like Xandar. So I kind of like that they've given you a character reason to dislike him, because to be fair, Xandar's kind of always been a little bit of a cipher. Not even a cipher. He's just kind of just always just been there. He's never really had much of character other than what you put in him. So when they give you this little moment that sort of speaks of his character, speaks to his whole vibe, you're like, oh, he's actually kind of a dick. Even by Dreadnought standards, he's kind of a dick. And Serana is actually not as bad, because she was like, no, we have to protect our family kind of thing. I like that. I thought that was cool. It was cool to have at least one of the Dreadnoughts be protective, and it's cool that it's one of their leaders that cares about them like that, which, you know, I think it's a good thing. I think even when you're a bunch of badasses, having some compassion is a good thing.
Well, yeah, anyway. I think they're very, very well established generally, the connections that they as a biker gang have as a family, you know, like, that's what keeps them connected. Despite them all being a bunch of, you know, delinquents, is that in generally speaking, they are a family that stays together because of their delinquency. But it is nice, that kind of contrast between the two characters. Yeah, I think this is a fantastic issue. I really enjoyed them establishing who Cobra Commander is going forward. Awesome. I'm very excited to see what comes next. And yeah, issue 5 is coming out. Yeah, we still have issue 5 of Duke to go. And then we're super excited to see what Destro miniseries and Scarlet miniseries does. Yeah, I'm out to top marks for this one.
Sweet. Top marks. Top marks meaning you're giving it 5 out of 5.
Hell yeah, my dude. Absolutely.
I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 because there was a rock that looked like Putin. I'm joking. Like, I'm going to give it 5 out of 5. I just thought that'd be funny to say. I just hope I didn't upset anybody who happens to like Putin. But
Steven's not saying anything, so I guess he's fine with it.
Yeah, it was a great
The reason I'm not saying anything, guys, is I have nothing but dirty audio for you. My son has found a piece of Duplo that
he's playing the X-Men song.
Very cool.
You guys remember that video I sent you guys of Banshee?
Of course, playing on Banshee.
That's why he's playing it. That's why he's playing it.
Good people, what you think of my new pickups?
Whoa.
Ellie, I got
so jealous of that one.
Hey, thanks for the solo. I got Sky Patrol figures most recently at a local vintage store.
All good Sky Patrol figures. Steven's like, I want them now. I'm kidding, bro.
What do you
I'm
think
kidding.
Of this guy, dude?
I love him. That's for me, that's the cherry on the cake for me. Like, that's the one I kind of saved him for last because that's my, like, that's where I want to get him. I want to get Airborne. So, yeah.
Like, I had not realized this about the lift ticket sculpt, but he can't really bring his arm close to his side. That's his... My son's dying.
He can probably do it with his left hand.
And it's totally true of the lift ticket sculpt as well. So it's true of not Franklin Tall Tree Airborne. Oh, fun fact. Can I play it? Airborne is a medic. Just... So infantryman and medic, meaning, you know, he kind of is another established medic in the G.I. Joe team. You can't get enough of
very cool.
Stalker, doc. Lifeline, doc. Yeah. Well, doc, more of a doctor. Medics. Falcon. Falcon's a medic. So is Airborne. And it's a great head sculpt. But topped by Static Line. My goodness.
Oh, you like Static Line more?
Interesting. I love Static Line.
Oh, I bought him here locally. Love that hair, dude.
We could get him locally on pegs.
We could get him locally because he's the only member of Sky Patrol who got single carded release outside of Sky Patrol. It was a European and other territories kind of exclusive. But we could get Static Line. And I just think that he takes that backstop mold and makes it unrecognizable.
Elevated.
Yeah.
I
mean, all of the guys are unrecognizable, but like, backstop only exists to sit in the persuader and be forgotten. This gives
but not like Wild Boar. It's not he's more exciting. I bought Static Line when I saw on a peg in Dion's because it said Sky Patrol on his card, and I was like, what? And then he had the chrome parachute, and I was like, what? Times two. So
I will say this though, what the hell is his weapon?
Yeah, you can unplug the middle part to obviously be his handgun.
Oh,
you know
boy,
this,
can
right?
You. The seller tried selling it to me without the plug-in thing, and he also had like a part slot on eBay. I was like,
whoa,
I've noticed this the gun is in your part slot. Can I filch that? He was like, yeah, okay, sure. But I've been
server was complete.
He plays Yu-Gi-Oh, bro.
With modern glasses, Static Line's sort of Klingon Batleth could be a drone, you know, little hovering.
I kind of like it being the tray, gun. You know, it's like a little tray gun, you know, put your tray in upright kill position,
put it around his waist.
What should I say?
I seriously always thought that it was, as a Spoon Killer in the comments suggests, the decapitator. Like, he held it in the opposite direction and he like threw it like a scythe or something, or he chopped people's heads off. I really didn't realize that he held it in the opposite direction.
I mean, the real conversations here.
Well, guys, it's not uncommon to make that judgment, Elliot. 1 second. Because behind me on my door, I have a poster, and in that poster, they have the Sky Patrol guys. And on that poster, Static Line has his weapon facing forward, like a claw.
Exactly. That's probably.
So it's like, whoever styled that photograph,
very good. What's wrong?
Well, they were using it like Jaws of Death or Jaws of Life.
Jaws of Life.
You know, like a picture claw. Like they thought, they looked
Jaws
at this accessory, and they figured, actually, the business end is the claw side. So have him hold it so that he can use it like a melee weapon. Yeah, there you go. Moonlight says, oh no, Spoonkiller says it's canon. So yes.
Yeah.
Agreed.
There you go. The claw.
Very good. Guys, another bit of new shit, and I'm sorry we didn't say this up front, but the agenda moved very swiftly past all our talking points. Mike the Hunter. Can we have a moment?
Yes, I wanted to say.
His movie, Bazooka, it has a surtitle. I'm blanking on it now.
Bazooka, a G.I. Joe movie.
there you go. Really on the nose. But guys, it is available. It is a paid production. So drop this guy some Patreon money if you want access to it. But we have watched it. And
he gave us the chance to watch it.
It's out and out rave.
It's absolutely, it's a lot of fun. You can check out a trailer on his channel. He also released the first scene on his channel as well before you do decide if you do want to pay to watch the movie. But I, even though, yes, we were given the opportunity to watch it for free, I would definitely pay to watch this. It is a full-length film. It's 2 hours long. It has...
Not sponsored.
Not sponsored at all. He gave it to us. He was like, check it out, you know, let us know. And it's fantastic. It's a full-on story. You get to see Bazooka is put into a situation where he, not to give obviously a lot away, but the movie opens. They're attacked. He's put in a situation where maybe he might not be able to be a G.I. Joe anymore, and he's given time off, and he has to kind of like rediscover himself and like who he is as a G.I. Joe essentially. And he goes road tripping, and a lot of crazy shit happens.
From good there. Idea.
It's fun. It's not just odd, full on action. You get some cool character moments, and Mike's impressions are absolutely incredible. Like, he voices basically the entire cast. Some of the voices are done by his daughter. I believe one of the voices is by his wife or his partner as well. And it's absolutely incredible. His voice impressions are amazing. One of the characters, I think it's Rikondo. I think it's Rikondo. He's made him sound exactly like Jason Statham. Like, you hear this and you're like, wait a minute. Did he pay Jason Statham to do this voice? Because it sounds so good.
Yeah, he got Jim Godfrey, bro. Because Jason Statham sounds like Jim Godfrey.
It's just not as bad as. Absolutely incredible. And speaking of action scenes, his action is so varied. Like, I think while we have chosen, obviously, to focus, because our love is 3 3/4 inch, his main focus on his channel has always been classified. So this is a classified movie. And as I'm watching his movie, I realized there is a lot you can actually do with classified figures, especially in when you actually set them up properly. You can get a lot of movement and a lot of, not still frames, but like starting out an action thing. You can kind of get a lot of very dynamic posing and action out of these figures. And
say nothing of the fact that Mike's fight choreography is varied.
So
and
good. Varied.
Like, I first thought he was a stunt coordinator when I saw his films, because I was like, this guy knows how to stage combat for camera and make it look good and make it look real.
Yeah, because we've discussed at least one of his other productions, which I think is the previous part of this ongoing, like, huge story that he does. It was set in Hong Kong, I think it was, wasn't it? And it had Destro in it.
Yeah, it was Kamakura.
It was Kamakura, yes. And there is kind of like an overarching story. So this is the next part in Mike's like overarching story. So you kind of get to see like what happened to a certain object a MacGuffin that he set up in the previous film that he did. Absolutely so much fun. And this is a compliment in a good way. His action is a lot like Michael Bay and like Zack Snyder's movies, where he kind of uses very cool slow motion effects to kind of like, and you really feel the impact.
Directors who should be action directors.
Yeah. Yes. You know, when they actually do action, it's so good. So I would definitely recommend checking out the trailer, checking out the first scene. They're both on his channel, Mike the Hunter 203. I'm sure we will link his channel down below, and probably a direct link to the trailer as well. Absolutely worth checking out. And thanks, Mike, for giving us the opportunity to watch it. Huge props. Like, huge props.
I just think astounding that something like this can even exist. Yeah, I don't think Bazooka's ever had a finer moment. It's the whole package. Let me just, I mean, without giving away anything, this is feature length. This is a two-hour production.
Dude, it's 2 hours long.
you can pop some popcorn and get through the entire bowl. You know, this is a meaningful contribution to not only G.I. Joe play motion films in general, but like to the character of Bazooka. Who knew? But he's compelling. We're at a wonderful place in our hobby where something like this exists. I had to pinch myself. I'm like, I'm watching toys right now. And this is a guy who makes films with his toys, but this is
while he's out there hunting for toys, he's playing with his toys as well, which is something we've always said, go out and play with your toys.
Not to diminish the fact that, like, shot to shot, he's putting in so much blood, sweat, and tears. I mean,
he does so much stuff that I wish I knew how to do. You know?
Exactly. I approach this from like a filmmaking point of view. It's in certain instances. I mean, a lot of the time, I'm really just a vanilla viewer, like just like astounded, agogged at what I'm seeing. But there are times when I'm like, okay, how did he do that? Let me break it down. Like the amount of layering of work, shot to shot to shot. I can't believe I'm watching the efforts of one man working alone in his spare time to produce this thing. It's epic.
It's fantastic. So,
there's your hard sell, guys. It is, I believe, $10. Not to put you off for anything, but I think it's $10 worth it.
No, for sure. I mean,
show some love. He's a family man.
I imagine that's the price of a cinema ticket, I think. And then you get to see a cool G.I. Joe movie.
You also get to support G.I. Joe's doing cool shit. You also get to support the person, not a corporation, which is always a good thing.
No, absolutely.
You want to see more of these? Yeah. This is the way we do it. We support.
Yeah, for sure. I hope he does a making of. I would absolutely watch a making of.
I'm sure he will. Maybe he'll do it as like a special feature or something. I'm sure he will.
He should. He absolutely should.
Guys, on the topic, you guys mentioned voice acting and voice work. Rob, just for Comic-Con Cape Town, there is a lady by the name of Veronica Taylor. Who voices for a lot of characters.
Wait, not Pikachu.
Yes.
She did
Scarlet from Sigma 6. And she did Sailor Pluto from Sailor Moon. And also April O'Neil from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That one, the early 2000s one.
Heck yeah.
So that's pretty cool. We're very lucky to have Veronica here in South Africa. She's a fantastic, fantastic human being. I've had the pleasure of having a conversation with her. And yeah. So so lucky. I'm jealous because it would be awesome to be down in Cape Town just to meet Andrew Koji and to hang out with Veronica again. And yeah, so to all of our South African Spoke Force members, have fun.
Yeah, have an absolute blast, and I'll definitely beguile everyone with hopefully many stories in episode 325 of G.I. Joe Rook when we do our live chat again.
I kind of want to send my Andrew Koji Storm Shadow to you now to get it signed. And you know, I'm like not into that kind of thing at all.
So dirty milk water.
Real small.
Anyway, guys, Rob,
I think that's
you
us.
Anything new?
That is.
We're all good.
We're all so good.
My wife's about to leave the house.
Deposit
with the boy in her arms.
Boop, 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 boop.
No,
congratulations! You have a child.
Boo, boo, sad boy. Mommy's going to work.
Thanks to everyone joining us in the chats, and thanks so much to the incredible guys who keep us
afloat,
keep us going, keep us alive, keep us absolutely in the keep us alive, the lights on, to all our fantastic
patrons. Thank you to
patrons,
the Burke Force, yes.
To the Burke Force.
Also, welcome to our newest member, and I see my board didn't upload. But it's Big Danny Cool. Thank you so much,
Big Danny Cool,
for supporting
absolutely
this awesomeness.
Thank you.
That we do. So yeah,
incredible man.
Thank you very much.
Hell
and,
yeah! Love you guys.
Cool. Yeah.
And if you enjoy us, you can even check out our incredible t-shirts on Teespring with amazing G.I. Joe inspired designs created by the
link in the description below.
Artistic deadly pencils up above here. Really cool, good quality. It comes to you, hopefully, fairly fast. I don't know. I'll have to try it. I'll have to try it out.
Rob
one
is
day.
Not overselling it, apparently.
Oh, I'm not. No.
Thanks to everyone joining us live in the chats.
Yes, thank you to everyone.
Frostbite G.I. Joe Repro has snuck in the 11th hour. He's happy to catch us live at long last. Yeah, we're painfully early.
He's been in and out.
Away in Australia.
guys, and then just, I suppose, on the way out of the door, let's just remember that thank you, HCC. If you've watched us and you managed to get this far, thank you so much for all the years of content, dude. I know we said it all up front, but in the spirit of guys like HCC and in the spirit of what Hooded Cobra Commander 788 was trying to do, let's make sure that we get together and talk about things that we like and not get together about things we don't like. So, you know, and we love G.I. Joe, we love toys, and we hate the new Transformers 1 movie, and that is why we all talk about
G.I. Joe. You hate the trailer. Me, I'm undecided, but I know this guy.
We'll see what happens.
Oh dear.
Well, there we go.
You love gummies. You love gummies, right?
Oh, gummies. Everyone loves gummies.
In the cinema.
At least the gummies had a higher budget.
Steven's trying to bribe his son into enjoying Transformers.
It's amazing. There you go.
Yo, Joe Berg, everyone.
Thanks for putting up with my distracted state.
Less drama. Yeah. Like that, Frostbite.
My life now.
Hell yeah.
Berg.
Boy.
Berg.